I'm Duncan MacLeod, and this is the Tech Central Show. You know the drill by now. Subscribe to us on YouTube at youtube.com/TechCentral or find us in your favorite podcasting app. You can simply search Tech Central, one word, and hit the subscribe button on the show you want to subscribe to. Now, something a little unusual on TCS. We're going to be chatting to the owner and driver of arguably the most anticipated electric car of 2024, and that's the Volvo EX30. Greg Kress works for Accenture, where he is Principal Director, Automotive and Mobility. So he knows quite a bit on the subject of EVs. Greg, welcome. Good to see you. Thanks for making the time to come into our studio.
Thanks so much, Duncan. Pleasure to be here.
When did you buy your Volvo EX30?
Sure. Well, when I saw the announcement of the vehicle around about June last year, I thought this is going to be a game changer. So I got my order in around about August last year. And then it was about waiting and seeing and thinking, geez, have I really put my order into this? Am I going to get this car? And it all happened over that period of time until the first delivery started coming out around February, March this year. Mm-hmm. So that was when I took
it. Must have been a long wait from August last year to February this year to wait for your vehicle.
It is. And it's not usually a characteristic purchase that I would make normally, but seeing such a game changer of a vehicle in terms of the technology, the price point as well that Volvo was bringing it out in South Africa, compared to what was really available on the market, I think really was what made me make that purchase decision to start with.
Yeah.
And one of the interesting things is they actually attracted us and put us onto a Volvo EX30 official users or customers group on Facebook.
Oh.
Right up until the delivery, and it's still going, but it was about just maintaining and showing you all the previews of the car before you actually took
the excitement levels up.
Keep the excitement levels up.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. So we're going to do this podcast today in two parts. We're going to do the first part where we're actually going to review the Volvo EX30. We're going to, I've had the experience over the last little while of driving a review vehicle as well. And so I'm going to share some of my views. Greg, you're going to share your views owning the vehicle for a lot longer than I've had the privilege to drive it. So your insights are probably going to be a lot more detailed than mine. But let's have a chat about the car. And then in the second half of the discussion, with your Accenture hat on, where you are a Principal Director for Automotive and E-Mobility, we're going to have a chat about the South African EV market, where we are, what needs to be done, what's holding the market back,
excellent,
what the potential is. So let's dive right in with a discussion on the Volvo EX30. So my thoughts on the vehicle, just very briefly. I think the first thing I noticed about it was its incredible performance off the starting line. We reviewed the twin motor version, which accelerated from 0 to 100 in approximately 3.6 seconds, which I think, if I'm not mistaken, means it accelerates faster than a Porsche Boxster.
Yes,
which is rather astonishing for a vehicle in this class, which starts in the range of around, I think it's around 775,000 for its basic configuration and goes up from there. But my general view of the vehicle was that Volvo has done a very good job of taking the best of its more expensive EVs, shoehorning them into a cheaper package, making cuts here and there to bring the cost down, but for the most part, making the right decisions and producing what's actually a very good product.
Absolutely. And that's my sentiment as well. I mean, one of the first things you notice when you step into the car is just how minimalist the interface is and the interior is.
Very minimalist, yes.
It's a Swedish kind of design language, if you will, but they've taken it to the extreme, to the point that you don't have a dashboard in front of you. All that you've got is a driver infrared sensor for driver fatigue. Mm-hmm. Everything they've done now is basically centralized on a central iPad-shaped interface screen.
Yes.
Right the way from your speed and all your car controls at the top to the middle part of the screen, which is your mapping and all your application functions, to the bottom part of the screen, which is your controlling your air conditioning and certain things like hazard lights as
Everything's through the screen.
Everything is through the screen. There's not even a button on the side door for opening windows or closing windows or locking the door. It's all centralized in the middle portion as well.
Which helps reduce costs, I guess.
It's exactly that. Mm. It's about simplifying and taking out unnecessary cabling where perhaps that would have added an extra percentage of cost. So that's really made it, in terms of a price point, very attractive. Mm. Outside as well, I think you can really attest that it's a really well-designed car, and just in terms of the way it looks, it's very distinctive. Mm. I mean, it's still, even though for 4 months now driving it, it's still a head-turner for many people to see this car coming and asking what type of car it is. So I think all in all, Volvo really have got a really compelling package, both exterior and interior, in terms of its design.
Yeah, no, it's very interesting. And one of the head-turning features, I think, are the headlights, which have the, I think they call them the Hammer of Thor headlights.
Thor's Hammer, correct.
Thor's Hammer, yeah. Headlights, which are quite distinctive. But you're quite right about the simplicity of the vehicle. In fact, there isn't a physical key. There isn't even a start-stop button, yep, in the vehicle. Yep. You simply get in, put the little fob that comes with it. I don't know if you have to do this, but certainly in the review vehicle we were looking at, we had to place it on the
NFC reader.
The NFC reader in the front of the car where you charge your phone.
Yes.
And that would start the vehicle, and then you could take the fob away and put it in your pocket. Is that a requirement of driving the vehicle? You have to touch it there first, start the vehicle, yeah, and then you can take it away?
So the plan, I think, is that they're going to phase in various ways of unlocking the car.
Okay.
The first phase is to give you this fob, which is really a proximity sensor. I actually keep mine in my pocket at all times. And you're right, when you step into the vehicle, it unlocks by itself. The lights light up, Thor's Hammer,
yes,
lights up to welcome you. You get in the vehicle. There is no start-stop button, which is even a simplification of some of the most modern EVs, yes, already today. But the car is essentially on when you're in the car as well. The other option they give you is these two sort of credit cards, and these can be linked to two different driver profiles. So, for example, mine and my wife's are two different profiles.
Oh, right.
So she's got her key. When she taps that key on the B pillar of the car, the seat moves and it resets to her positioning. When I tap it, it resets to my positioning, including the mirrors. So some nice personalization options in there. But you don't necessarily need to leave that car key in the NFC reader, because your phone actually goes there once you're driving, because it's a wireless charger as well.
Yes.
The next phase, I believe, which is a software update, will be the ability to unlock the car using basically a digital key in your iOS or your Android phone, which is just also a tap on the B pillar with your watch or with your phone, and once you're in, you're basically driving. So it's a bit something to learn in terms of the security of the car, but once you're in it, it becomes very natural.
Yeah. When I looked at the vehicle and I looked at the design inside, my first thought was, this looks a lot like a Tesla Model Y. Do you think Volvo set out to build the European Model Y with this vehicle?
It's an interesting point, and it's a lot of people in a lot of forums have made that correlation, that this is the closest thing that you can get to a Tesla in South Africa is the Volvo EX30 as it stands. I think, you know, Tesla's led the way in many respects in EVs, but particularly in their centralization of this panel, of this control system, of the infotainment, and minimizing everything else. When you think minimalist EVs, you automatically think Tesla, but I think Volvo have done a really good job to make it their own. I wouldn't say it's a copy, but it's definitely their own version of that type of design.
Okay, so let's go through the positives and negatives of this vehicle. I think let's start with the negatives, because there are fewer negatives than there are positives. For you, what are some of the downsides of this vehicle, if any?
Yeah, it's a hard question to answer, because I'm probably still in the movie of, well, this is a great EV overall. I think there are some compromises that you have to accept with a car this size. I mean, and this is something I knew all along, but for example, the rear seating is a little bit tight, but at the end of the day, it's understandable, because it's really a compact SUV.
Yeah.
That being said, you know, and we can talk about it, I've taken a longer road trip with five adults in the car, four adults, sorry, and it was a comfortable trip, at least for most of the people. There wasn't any major complaints or back issues or anything like that. So it can be done. And I think, again, where we are with the range of these cars is probably something we'll see improving over time. Right now, if you punish the car and you drive it too enthusiastically, you can reduce some of your range. But if you drive it properly, you can actually get really decent range out of the extended range single motor version as well.
Yeah. Okay, so you've taken on a long distance trip already, and we're gonna spend some time actually talking about that, because I think there'll be a lot of interest in what's involved in taking a long distance trip in South Africa
for sure
in an EV that doesn't have a small engine backup like the BMW i3 had.
The range extender, yes.
Range extender motor. Correct. Yeah. So we'll get into that in a moment. But I think there were one or two things that I noticed in the vehicle that were perhaps where they cut corners perhaps a little bit too much. One of them was the dash right across the front of the vehicle. I felt it looked a little plasticky and cheap. I think that for a very little additional money, they could have probably done a better job with the dash, especially the size of the glove box was really small in the center. It's a very small space. You could probably fit a a small lady's handbag in there, not much else. So that was one downside. And I did notice, by the way, my knee, you're quite tall as well. Did you notice your left knee tapping on the dash quite a bit?
It does, if you really push that seat a little bit further forward. Mm. But again, you make a compromise for that, but you're going to compromise on the back seat if you do that.
Yeah, for sure. And I must say, I did miss seeing a speedometer directly in front of me, but I think I'd get used to just glancing to the left to see it. But it is a little weird looking forward and down and seeing nothing directly in front of you.
No, you're right. It really is something that is completely new to, I'd say, South African drivers and consumers, not to have anything in front of you. But I appreciate the actual pure driving experience in a way of not having any distraction ahead of you if you just want to enjoy the vehicle for what it is. But yeah, it doesn't take long just to glance to the left and see that in your peripheral vision that speedometer is there for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's talk a bit about the positives then. I mean, this clearly must be one of the best entry-level EVs in South Africa today, if I can call a 775,000 rand car an entry-level car. But in the EV category, I guess it is. And it has a lot of luxury with it. What are your thoughts on the sort of luxury elements of the vehicle?
Yeah, I mean, this is it. I think you spot on the price point for what it offers as an EV. If I just look at the performance, as you've mentioned already, the incredible acceleration, it's like having 100% torque available at zero RPM.
And at any speed. I was actually doing 100 kilometers an hour and I thought, okay, let me floor it. It was there.
It's there on tap when you need it. It's almost, I've used the analogy like bullet time in The Matrix.
Yes.
When everything else slows down around you and you've got full control of time. That's what it feels like to drive an EV. So that's a great positive. I think, as I said, the battery range is something that we evolve, but even as it stands now, this car offering around 420 Ks of real-world range, if you drive it conservatively, you drive it normally, is quite a practical range to have. And I find that is incredibly positive. It, you know, many people might think, well, an EV, you need to charge every night, overnight. It's like a cell phone. Mm-hmm. The reality is you don't really need to do that. So this car enables me to only worry about charging once every week and a half.
So do you charge mainly at home?
At home and at the office. Actually,
okay.
So
okay.
As part of our sustainability drive, we're actually now using renewable energy in the office with two EV chargers, and that's one of our employee value propositions we're offering. So
okay.
I think you'll see more and more of that coming where corporations and enterprises are offering charging facilities as part of the package. So
yeah.
That makes a big difference. So the positives are really, you know, the whole design, the package, and just the driving experience,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, okay. And you I believe have solar at home as well, so
I do. Yes.
And you I presume that the office is solar as well?
It's wheeling into the waterfall area.
Okay.
ATAC Properties is undergoing a renewable energies wheeling project. So it's a combination of wheeling in clean energy from RPPs but also having on-site solar on some of the tenant buildings.
Mm-hmm.
So ultimately, yes, that's an example of decentralized renewable energy working for the buildings, the tenants, and now for mobility, which is great.
Yeah. So you're actually charging up your car with sun from the Northern Cape, probably.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Fascinating. Yeah. Okay. Other positives? I saw the Harman Kardon, it looks like a sound bar in the front
of
the vehicle.
Yes.
I think it is a sound bar. The audio from that is pretty good.
Absolutely. I mean, it's got a really amazing software-based equalizer. Mm-hmm. So it's quantum surround logic effects. You can tune to your own preference. As you say, it's a sound bar. I think another 8 speakers are also within the car as well. So sound-wise, it's ridiculously loud if you really wanted that level.
Yeah.
But absolutely.
And a good woofer as well, which you can feel if you're sitting in the passenger seat.
That's the thing. That's the thing. And you know, when you're parking potentially in a parking lot or you're waiting for any particular reason, you can use that. The battery is immense. So you can use power to whatever you want. You're not going to use a 12-volt battery.
Mm.
Likewise, you can actually run the aircon in this car when your car's not even, when you're not even in the car. So hypothetically, you go to a shopping center, you're in the sun for 2 hours, you can leave the aircon running.
Mm.
You come back to the car at 17 degrees and you've used 1% of your battery.
Mm.
Can't do that in any other type of vehicle. Mm-hmm. So those are really interesting little innovations.
Yeah. The other point I noted down was the interface is very clean. It's running software from Google. Do you know if that software that's running on the Volvo is some sort of custom software that Volvo has developed in conjunction with Google, or is it a standard Google operating system that can be supplied to any vehicle manufacturer?
Definitely Volvo-specific software, mm-hmm. but obviously in partnership with Google and Google services. So the middle part of the screen, as I said, is all about the user interface and the user experiences. So it comes with the Google Play Store. Mm-hmm. So you can connect via the mobile hotspot with your phone or with a Wi-Fi unit, or in future the eSIM of the car will actually also be enabled, I believe, in South Africa to use integrated data connectivity services. So it's constantly be able to connect to the internet. But you can choose apps to download. So for example, Angry Birds popped up the other day where you can start to play on the screen of the phone if you wanted to. It comes with a built-in Vivaldi web browser. So you can be, you know, using the internet with a full keyboard on it as well. I've even got DSTV streaming to work.
Really?
On the EX30.
Amazing.
Not while you're driving.
Just straight out of the Google Play Store.
Straight out of the Google Play Store. We'll just put your credentials into the browser. Obviously, you're logging in. You're doing a few things, but you could.
So it's running Android in effect.
It's running Android. Yeah, mm-hmm. Android automotive, not mm-hmm. Android
auto
for the car. Right. For the phone, I mean.
Yeah. Fascinating. Do you use an Android or an iPhone?
iPhone,
and how does it integrate with the Volvo?
So that's one of the things that we've been promised, and the whole world is waiting with its bated breath, all the EX30 customers, for Apple CarPlay to become available within the car. That still isn't available, but it's been obviously communicated it will come in a future over-the-air update. Mm-hmm. Right now, you have to kind of work with Bluetooth for the media and Google Maps for your navigation mm-hmm. and a few other things. So you can't really take advantage of Apple's like podcasts and music and so on too easily.
So it's a better experience if you have an Android phone right now?
I wouldn't say better, but it's definitely probably more familiar because you're an Android person. You would know how Google services work in general.
Is Android Auto supported? Because I didn't actually try and connect Android Auto to it.
That I don't think so. No. I think it's because it's got Android Automotive.
You can get all the apps you want.
You get all the apps you want. Okay. But then if you're an iPhone user, you can get Apple CarPlay in future.
Because of course CarPlay and Android Auto are really just screens. There's nothing behind
They're projections
it. Projections onto your car screen rather than being something that's integrated with your vehicle.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But I must say, I think even when Apple CarPlay does come out, for me, I would probably keep using the Google services because they've got integrated charging locations inside the Google Maps in that version. Mm-hmm. So when you start driving around, it actually tells you what's your state of charge when you leave and what's your state of health going to be, or state of charge when you get there.
Very nice.
That isn't available in Apple CarPlay, the Google version. So I think a couple of nuances to the way it's implemented.
Okay, interesting. Now, you mentioned that there have been a number of software updates to the EX30. You say you've been on this journey of the software updates with the EX30. I take it there have been a lot of them. Take us through that process and what you've seen.
So the first versions that came out was version 1.2, 1.2.1. Those were the shipped versions that came out in March. Very shortly after that, 1.3 came out and 1.3.1 came out. And what Volvo are doing is they're actually globally saying, here comes the release, this is the version, this is the features that are coming out. You can go to a dealership and get that loaded in the meantime, or wait for 3 weeks, and then what will happen is it'll become available for an OTA, over-the-air update, mm-hmm. on your display. And that happened with me. So I was on version 1.2.1, and then it popped up saying, version available, can I start downloading? And I said, yes. I will say that there was a little bit of a hiccup in the first download because it got to 91% and then stopped downloading. Ooh, yeah. And it was only because of a connectivity issue, I believe, with the back end and the eSIM in the car. And many other users felt this. And this caused a little bit of a ripple in the in forums around the world that this is a bit of a problem. But Volvo quickly rectified it. And I actually went to a dealership, managed to get mine updated from 1.2 to 1.4. And it immediately you can see a whole lot of new features, the way the menus work, and in fact, like new features for where it actually detects sunlight coming into the side windows, and it'll compensate for that using the aircon automatically, depending on that. So some interesting features for that. But it's a bit of a journey. I think the next version, 1.5, hopefully we, fingers crossed, we'll see the Apple CarPlay and a few others, and the digital key, as I mentioned, coming out. But I think the point is, this is how software-defined vehicles are becoming more and more of a thing in South Africa, where the cars are being shipped with a certain version and new features are just going to be, you know, released down the line for the perpetuity of the car.
They've become computers on wheels, right?
Almost cell phones, yeah. So like iOS gives you features, so will Volvo give you features in the future, including performance upgrades. Maybe you get a 3.2-second to 100 in future.
Yeah. Well, at the moment we actually buy our phones, or one of the factors we consider when buying our phones is how many years of software updates we're going to get, which is one of the reasons Samsung is now 100%. Saying we'll give you 7 years of updates to match Apple, which also offers about 7 years of updates on the iPhone and the iPad. Do you think that's going to become a selling feature on cars in future? Volvo promising you're going to get 10 years of updates on this vehicle for after purchase?
Absolutely. Even now, they've you know, the promises that a package in 4 years of connectivity services with Google's services as well. And then after that, you know, you start to look at options to extend that subscription. But this is the way the world is moving. Subscription models for certain features in a car, certainly not things that you would expect to be default, like seat heating and so on, would probably be never what you would see you need to pay extra for, but
that's all BMW. Well,
this is exactly why there was a bit of a backlash there, I think. But it's for features that are, you know, really can't be even anticipated. Things like Gen AI, Chat GPT interfaces to your car. Imagine having your manual all loaded up in a Chat GPT interface as a feature that you could pay for, and you can just speak to your car if you notice something wrong. Or those are the things I think you'll start to see in terms of software coming out.
Fascinating. One thing I did want to ask about was, and it's the middle of winter while we're doing this test, and this vehicle was clearly designed for the European market. It has a very large glass roof, which can't be opened. In your experience, has that heated the car up as a result of the African sun beating down on it?
I was admittedly quite nervous about that panoramic roof when I first got the car, and in fact I was sort of on the fence about that spec. I have taken delivery of a car which does come with that roof. The research I did on it was that it's got a very well-designed infrared layer which really reflects out all of the UV for one thing, and it lets through just the ambient light. So if you're sitting in the car and you're looking up through it, you can see an amazing view. It's really bright and sunny on a sunny day. If I got out the car and looked at it from the top down, it's actually black. You can't see in. So it's an incredible optical technology that they've put in place there. I do believe you can get a pop-up cover if you want to put it into the car. I've kept that on sort of the back burner as of to whether I really need it. Maybe talk to me in a year once you go through a proper summer if I really think it's necessary. But so far, I think it's really an amazing design.
But you didn't find yourself getting not too hot in your drive down to White River, which is a hot part of the country.
Not at all. I think
it should be fine.
Yeah.
Okay. And how much money are you saving having switched to an EV? I mean, one of the reasons people consider EVs is that, in theory, the cost of electricity is lower than the cost of petrol.
Yes.
How much are you saving every month, given that you're charging at the office and charging on solar
at home
as much as possible at home?
Yeah. No. The maths are straightforward. I mean, if you are, you know, driving a car where you need to spend 1,000, 2,000 rand a month on two tanks of fuel to do something like, you know, 2,500, 3,000 kilometers, that's your equivalent cost that you're basically burning every time you go to a fuel station. Charging at home via solar, you definitely need to have enough kilowatt peak capacity on your roof so that ideally you are putting all the surplus energy that your house is not using into the car, ideally.
Without drawing from the grid,
that's exactly right. You don't want to be in a situation where you only half sort of subsidizing from solar and then you're still tapping into the grid after that.
And I guess there are ways of controlling that as well. You can actually, I don't know if the vehicle does it, but certainly you can add components to your electrical infrastructure to
100%
to determine how quickly the vehicle gets charged based on the amount of available sunlight.
Exactly, and it's all software actually. So both the vehicle has and my wallbox charger have got a sliding scale where I can limit the current going into the car to my own choice. So if I see there's only, say, 3 kilowatts of peak solar available, I can drop the current down from 32 amps to 16 amps going into the car, and I can just sort of match that. Or I can set up my wallbox charger to do that automatically for me so that it just tracks, you know, as that solar curve goes.
Okay.
It just ensures always that you're only having enough solar going in and not drawing from the grid. So if you really manage it carefully, you can really get away with not tapping into the grid and saving that 3,000 rand a month in fuel, on a monthly basis. So I always say, every time you go and fill up with fuel, you might as well have just bought yourself one solar panel. That's pretty much what you've just paid for. And if you can look at it that way, ultimately, the equation makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. You mentioned you have a wall box charger. Is that a Volvo specific charger or was it something you had?
It's a third party charger. It's like a little white box or a black box. I've got it connected directly into the into my DB board.
Okay.
Got a dedicated circuit that runs from that wall box for 32 amps to the DB board. And it's on the inverter essential circuit. Mm-hmm. So that means even during load shedding, which is key, that if there's sun available, the car can charge. Okay. So that's really never a blocking point with or without load shedding.
Yeah, fascinating. Fascinating. Okay. The last question I wanted to ask you on the car itself was what impact has it had on your insurance? You were mentioning before we started recording that you had a Toyota Corolla Cross before.
Yes.
And that the insurance on that was actually significantly higher than it has turned out to be on the Volvo. Why is that?
It was interesting. When I was shopping around for insurance, you compare prices, but it stood out to me that my insurer provided a price to me that was lower than what the Toyota Corolla Cross Hybrid was. And reasons were just, well, Volvo isn't as much of a hijack target as Toyota apparently is. We can look at the data behind that. Secondly, being a battery electric vehicle, there just aren't any parts to be stripped out of this car besides the battery, which is, you know, a high voltage piece of kit, and you really need to know what you're doing. Exactly. So let's not assume that that's not a target. It's in the future. For those reasons, the pricing actually came in at least about 150 Rand cheaper per month than what I was paying. So overall, I mean, happy customer, I think.
Despite the Volvo being a significantly more expensive car, you're paying less
absolutely.
In insurance.
I will say maybe that the story on tracking the like Discovery, for example, tracks your vitality drive points by how well you drive. Just a funny story is when I'm driving on the N1 and I put this car into autonomous driving mode, which is level 2, meaning you've got to keep your finger on the wheel, but it's pretty much braking and accelerating and steering for you. And even with that doing its own thing, Discovery Vitality Drive was catching up Volvo's automatic drive for quite a few times for harsh acceleration or harsh braking compared to the sensor. So it's almost like two AI models battling each other here, and I'm the loser in terms of vitality drive points.
So in summary, you'd recommend this car, I take it?
I think so. There are a range of new EVs that are promised to come to South Africa, but I really think Volvo have done a great job in almost getting the first mover advantage in this price bracket for this feature set. For the technology that they provide and just, you know, the overall experience that they're offering, I think you really would do well to find another car that can compete at that level than what they've got.
The only other company I've noticed in this price category is BYD, the Chinese vendor, OEM. Have you had a chance at all to look at BYD
yes.
vehicle?
Yes.
Thoughts
yes.
compared to the Volvo?
Excellent car. I mean, this is one of the key things where we start to see is that the Chinese brands are making exceptionally good quality cars, especially in the EV range. And BYD is a world leader at the moment. So the Atto 3, the Dolphin Mini, hopefully coming in future, are all going to come through at lower price points than the Volvo. It really does come down then to a choice of subjectiveness on the design and some of the features that each car offers. I've driven the BYD Atto 3 a couple of times. Fantastic acceleration and drive experience as well. The only challenge, I guess, is to become more familiar to South Africans. You know, when you say BYD, it's BY what? You know?
Yes.
So you got to kind of explain. This is Build Your Dreams. It's a Chinese brand, and this is where they are in the world. They're the number one seller in China right now. You know, way ahead of Tesla and VW and the like. So, yeah, I expect to see more from them, I'm sure.
Right, let's rate the Volvo EX30 then. Value for money, what would you give it out of 10?
About an 8.
An 8, okay. And the driving experience?
Well, that's a 10 out of 10.
10 out of 10.
For an EV driver, it's fantastic.
Great. And overall?
Overall, 8.5.
8.5. Solid 8.5.
Yes.
Okay. Let's do the second part of this discussion.
Perfect.
And that's to talk about the EV market in South Africa, what's holding it back, what's not holding it back. What consumers are thinking, what the government is doing, et cetera, et cetera. There's quite a lot of ground to cover. So my first question, we haven't had load shedding now for, touch wood, for 120 days, 130 days. But ESCOM constantly warning that it could come back, that the reserve margin is not that great. And if there's a breakdown in generating plant, we could see a return to load shedding. In your view, is there a place for electric vehicles in a market like South Africa where clearly there's a major energy constraint?
Absolutely. And for multiple reasons, I think we can look at it from an angle of just the decarbonization that the world needs to go through in general. And transportation and mobility being a huge factor in that space. Economically, South Africa has a very healthy automotive export market. But if we don't transition to where the world is going and meet the demand of what the world markets are and what type of vehicles and technology they demand, we could fast become irrelevant as a manufacturing destination. Beyond that, just the ability to really drive these types of vehicles on a mass scale, not only in the private passenger vehicle market, but also in the public sector as well, minibus taxis, buses, trucks that are all moving in that direction. All of the indicators, all of the market sort of shifts are showing that this is a positive move to make, and we're seeing those lessons being learned around the world. I don't think South Africa can afford not to make this transition, and we just need to have a collective effort on the energy supply side to be able to cater for this future demand. It makes no sense, though, to your point, that we have, potentially 500,000 EVs on the road by 2030 that are all charging off Eskom burning coal to supply the energy for these cars. That's why the current trajectory we're on, I think, on renewable rollout, decentralization of energy, people putting solar on their roofs, corporations putting solar on their office parks, is all fantastic foundational groundwork for a future where you've got distributed energy and mobility also benefiting from it.
Mm-hmm. We know that the previous Minister of Trade and Industry, Ibrahim Patel, he was very slow in making changes to the EV policy environment in South Africa from both the manufacturing perspective and the consumer perspective. But from the consumer perspective, he often made the comment that given South Africa's energy constraints, there's no urgency on his part to stimulate demand in the South African market by cutting the taxes on EVs. Did he have a point?
I think he had a good intention with that statement, but the reality is we're not talking massive volumes here. There's around 12 million, maybe more, cars on South African roads.
Okay.
By allowing demand-side incentives to actually come into the mix, we're not going to replace those 12 million vehicles with EVs overnight. Mm. It's going to be in the thousands to start with, and then maybe the tens of thousands in the next 2 to 3 years, up to sort of 500,000 by 2030. Even that is a fraction. It's less than 7% of the total car park in South Africa. So there's no real risk to an overwhelming situation that you've got 12 million cars suddenly to charge off Eskom's grid. Mm. So while I think he made the point that it's an important factor to consider, it's definitely not a constraint that we should be economically bound to. I think as I just said, there's so much happening that exponentially we will be able to get there when the demand actually picks up.
Mm. It's been quite interesting to see what happens on the political side of things, not just here in South Africa, but globally. European countries for the last few years have been very much incentivizing the purchase of EVs. Even the US under the Biden administration has been incentivizing EVs. I know that Trump has now said that on day one, if he's elected and assumes office in January next year, he's going to scrap all the EV subsidies and mandates that Joe Biden introduced during his term in office. So it's quite a sort of a flexible, fluid environment globally at the moment. Do you think that South Africa should be subsidizing EVs or taxing them less than we do so-called ICE vehicles or internal combustion engine vehicles?
Well, this is the reason. I mean, historically, South Africa have had we've got seven OEMs in South Africa that are manufacturing ICE vehicles, predominantly for the export market. Some of them even doing some hybrid components in these cars as well. To make that transition, on the one hand side, the investment this sort of capital incentive of 150% has been announced in February by the finance minister to encourage the OEMs to transition over the course of the next 3 or 4 years to be able to make EVs in South Africa. The problem is that OEMs globally are not going to make the decision to invest that money unless there's a healthy domestic demand
right.
for those products being made in the country. We can't just have South Africa making cars for an export market and no local consumption. So we have
to. Is that because of the economies of scale?
Economies of scale, and to be quite honest, South Africa is not the ideal geographic location or destination for making cars in the first place. The reason it exists is because we've got a very good export policy, which is working on imports and rebates. Mm-hmm. It's the APDP2. But that's not enough on its own just for these OEMs to make the decision. So many of the OEMs who want to make EVs in South Africa are saying, well, we're not competing with each other to do this. We're competing with other locations in the world, for example, in Morocco or Egypt or Indonesia, that are closer to the markets where EVs are being sold. Right. And South Africa kind of gets relegated to the back bench when it comes to that decision. So absolutely, we need to make EVs more affordable, more attractive, and at a certain entry price level that when a prospective customer walks into a dealership, they've got a choice of between an EV at the same price as an ICE vehicle at the same price. And then for all the reasons we've discussed around fuel savings and maintenance savings and lower decarbonization or emissions, they make the right decision to go EV. Mm-hmm. And that needs some domestic stimulation. So yes, I'm hoping that maybe with the new government of national unity that the right policies are considered and that maybe there's a bit of an EV task force mm-hmm. that forms between the private and public sector to really look at the situation, unpack what incentives will work, even model out what incentives will work, and be as bold as to say, let's drop import duties at least to price parity of the ICE vehicle, or even drop them altogether for a period of time that we can monitor and just see how the uptake goes and bring them back when we've got a EV manufacturing industry to protect. Because it makes no sense to have an import duty on an EV to protect an industry that doesn't really exist yet.
Yeah, and EVs are being punished right now in that the taxes are actually higher on an EV than they are on an ICE vehicle. Do you know the numbers? I mean, how is that tax structured currently?
Yeah, so there's a couple of factors happening there. There's the straight import duty itself, which is 25% on an ICE on an EV versus 18% on an ICE vehicle. However, that 25% applies to vehicles not coming out of Europe, so it's more around other sources. Over and above that, there's another thing called the ad valorem tax. Mm-hmm. And this hasn't been looked at for about 30 years now, when a luxury car was deemed to be anything over 200,000 rand. So even if you're buying an entry-level, you know, Swift, for example, you're paying some scale percentage of luxury tax on that vehicle. Mm. So that could be relooked at completely and completely changed to be more affordable for the general consumer. So a combination of those two things can really change the game, I think, for allowing more companies to actually release their EVs. Many are on the fence. I mean, all the brands have got EVs waiting in the wings, but are waiting to see how to make it affordable and even take a cautious approach. I mean, VW launched the ID4 last week. Very exciting product. But
that's coming here, isn't it?
It is here. Mm. There's 10 of them here. Mm. And they're doing test fleets. It's a fantastic car. But they haven't announced a price point yet.
Okay.
And they've only announced that it's going to be available for leasing versus purchasing in the first phase, because the price point is just unclear right now as to what people will accept.
Interesting. If we were to scrap taxes on these vehicles, how much could the prices come down on, say, an EX30? Are we talking 5 to 6 digits here?
Well, yeah. I mean, the price range on the EX30, about 775 to about a million, depending on the spec. I mean, you take off that 25% of that, you're taking off maybe 150,000 rand, 200,000 rand, and suddenly you're down to sort of 550 for an EV, sort of an EX30 spec car, which is phenomenal. I mean, that is almost becoming like a no-brainer decision.
Is that what you're paying for that vehicle in Europe, roughly?
In Europe, the price point is around, they call it the $35,000 car or the €35,000 car.
Right.
So if you just calculate that out,
about 650,000 rand.
You'll see where the price point lands. There are the Inflation Reduction Act in the US. There are tariffs or incentives in Europe which make it even cheaper.
Mm.
So they're benefiting from that, whereas in South Africa, we just have to pay whatever duties land on us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is the EV supporting infrastructure, charging stations, et cetera, adequate in South Africa now, do you think? You've had some experience driving the national roads. Do you feel that there are enough charging stations both on the highways and in the city itself?
Yes. So if you just limit your driving to in-city, then you've got sort of your home charger, you've got your work charger, and you've got a couple of like fuel stations like the Pantry, for example, the Sasol Garage in Rosebank, where you've got the ability to park for 30 minutes and charge.
Okay.
You won't have a problem getting around an urban area. The question now becomes in everyone's mind, but I want to do a trip to Durban. I want to do a trip to Nelspruit,
yeah.
For example, White River like I did. And then you start to think, well, are there chargers out there? Mm. And where do I even start to look? And the reality actually is that we have about 380 to 400 DC fast chargers and AC slow chargers around the country. It's just that you really need to know the apps to use and the sort of websites to go to find them. And that's a bit of an effort to go through, and there could be, and there will be, I believe, a lot more effort put into the customer education that's needed to show people that it's possible.
The car, though, tells you where to find an EV station as well. I noticed in Google Maps, it's the voice interface that you expect with Google Assistant.
Correct.
So you just talk to the car and say, where's the nearest charging station, and it'll tell you.
Exactly, exactly. So that's a great user feature. My recommendation is that you don't leave it to the last minute when you start asking those questions of the car. You really want to know where you're going beforehand. So maybe let me talk a bit about this trip to White River and back.
Yeah, let's go through that.
Use that as an example. Yeah, so, yeah. I mean, that was about a 380-kilometer drive from sort of Midrand, let's say, to White River. The plan that I made was to, you know, try and get there with just one stop, as you would stop anyway for a petrol break or, you know,
some lunch.
Grab some lunch or coffee. And when I looked at my mapping, there's a really good app called ABRP, A Better Route Planner. In fact, anyone can download it and you can actually start simulating your own future EV drives if you want to.
Okay.
But it plans out. It says, right, you want to start with 100% charge. So typically you never charge your battery more than 80%. But I charged mine up to 100% the night before. We left early on a Saturday morning. Got to the charging point that I wanted to, which was Millie's on the N4. Mm-hmm. It's a little farm market. It's on near
Mashadadop.
Just past Mashadadop. Mm. And I had 35% charge left, and I'd done about 230 Ks already. So comfortably within limits, no range anxiety at all, and a very, very pleasant drive. You know, cruise control most of the way. I then put in about 20 minutes, charged about 17 kilowatt hours into the battery. That brought me up to 66%.
That must have been a DC station.
It was a DC station. It was a Rubicon 80 kilowatt charger. So literally 20 minutes. My wife grabbed some coffee and we were ready to go. I must just say, when people see cars charging at these stations, the amount of interest that you get is crazy. It's actually overwhelming. There were queues of people asking, how does this work? So I think there's a curiosity out in
South Africa. We noticed the same when we were testing, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So which is great to see. And I love to sort of engage with people on that. So and then off we went. And our next destination was really to get to Riverside Mall in Nombombela, Nelspruit. That's got 150 kilowatt DC charger.
Wow.
Yeah. So again, got there. The beautiful thing at the moment is that you can drive right up to the charger and inevitably it's open. Mm-hmm. So it's not like you're queuing. Mm-hmm. Pops in there, started the charge from 45% up to 100%, grabbed a lunch. 40 minutes later, you know, I got a notification on my EX30 app that the charging had complete. We weren't even finished lunch yet. Mm-hmm. So it's not like we were standing at the car waiting for it to charge. And off we went, and then spent the night at some family, and then I didn't even bother to even top it up again when we left on the Sunday morning. Straight back again, got to Millie's. I think I had about 50% charge by the time I got there. Did a sort of quick burst of a charge, another 15 kilowatt hours, maybe went up to 80%, and then from there all the way home. And that was it. It was actually, if I can say, disappointingly easy.
Okay.
To get to White River and back. So when people feel that there's a lack of charges, it's more of a perception. Mm. Right now, there are enough charges, around about 400, for the amount of EVs on the roads, which is around about 4,500, 5,000, tracks at a ratio of about 1 to 10. Mm-hmm. And that's roughly the ratio that Europe is using.
Okay.
When they've got about 600,000 charges and about 6 million EVs.
600,000.
Exactly. Oh. So it's just about keeping track with the growth and making sure that, you know, the capacity is there.
Yeah, fascinating. But I do wonder if you wanted to take a less busy route. I mean, the N4 to Nelspruit down to Maputo is a very busy corridor. If you wanted to drive from Johannesburg to Cape Town via Upington, for example, would you make it? It's a bit of an unfair question because I know you haven't done the route.
I haven't done it, but I absolutely believe I could make it with the right planning.
You're right.
And so right now, yes, you do need that planning. And you also need to be assured ahead of time that the charger is functional. That's also an issue. Sometimes people have got two chargers and it's broken, or one half of the charger isn't working, so they've had to queue behind two or three other cars that are using that charger. So there are teething issues, but this is like the first cell phone networks in 93. You know, there are patches where there isn't coverage. You know, so if we're willing to accept that, I think we will see the growth coming and we'll see it working.
Question, do you drive around, especially on long distance trips, with an extension cord in your vehicle?
No, but I do have a slow charging cable with me, which is allows me to charge through a three-prong plug.
That's what I mean, yeah. So I'm just wondering what the etiquette is. For example, you book an Airbnb near the Kruger or something, you go there, and then do you plug your car in without chatting to the Airbnb first? I mean, these are things we're going to have to figure out as a society, right?
It's charging etiquette, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Do you steal some charge on the side from your bathroom, or do you inform your guest house?
Yeah.
No. It's an interesting space to be in, just to see that.
For sure. Okay, so what's your next route? What are you planning to do next in your vehicle that's going to challenge it?
Well, we are planning sort of longer range trips. I think we'd like to do a Durban trip as well. Mm-hmm. I think that's a very well-established corridor. There are a number of charging points that you can pick up along the way there.
Right.
But as you said, I think it's more interesting to do the road less traveled. Mm. And people want to have confidence that they can do these kind of N7, N8, N9 roads rather than the N1, N2, N3, and have a place to charge. And maybe I can just mention, I think there's some really exciting developments coming around in charging network infrastructure. And one of the charging groups I've seen with an amazing plan is Zero Carbon Charge. So what they're doing is they've plotted out every 150 kilometers on all these roads is where they'd like to drop a high-speed DC charger.
Okay.
But they're doing it with an off-grid approach. So in other words, they go to a landowner, discuss with them about putting down a solar farm with a battery energy storage system.
We've written about these guys, actually.
Yeah, I think so.
Interesting company.
Absolutely. And I think that we need to see more of those types of companies emerging, which are going to cater for the 500,000 EVs that we want to see on these roads. We need 50,000 chargers then, not just 500. So where they're going to come from is the question. And it has to come from companies offering sustainably sourced, clean energy, high-speed DC chargers at interesting locations. Not maybe your ultra cities, but your farm stalls and your pet stalls and those sort of places that are more family-oriented.
Yeah, I'd always assumed that these things would just be installed at garages, but that's not necessarily going to be the case.
That customer experience is evolving now. You don't necessarily have to go and queue there anymore. You can go and, you know, see some farm animals with your kids, for example, for 30 minutes. So it's exciting to see where it will go.
So the main players in the EV charging space, grid cars, we've had a chat on this show with the CEO, Winston Yadon. There's Rubicon, you mentioned, and Zero Carbon Charger. Those are the main players in the space.
Look, grid cars and Rubicon are really the pioneers. Both of them have, without them and their investments and their ambition and vision, we wouldn't even have the infrastructure. So I think they really have done fantastic. But it's opened up the market for new entrants as well, and we'll see more and more of them. Zero Carbon, I think, one of them. There's a couple of others, I think, that are considering some entry points as well. But to be honest, it's almost like growing out another Vodacom and MTN and Cell C and Telkom. You know, these are the players that are emerging that all will be able to integrate with each other. So you'll have a single charging card, hopefully.
They're all interoperable at the moment.
Interoperable, with the back ends now sort of working together. So you load your card once, you tap it on these stations when you need them, and you just get billed that way, and all of them reconcile on the back end. So I think that's it. But again, you know, if you can depart your point of departure with 100% of your battery charged off your own solar, that's already 400 Ks in the bank that you've got on your trip. And yes, if you get to the resort and you can charge off the resort, or if they've got a destination charger themselves, then off you go again. You top up, and then you only need those kind of high-speed DC chargers along the way.
You just need a little bit of planning, but probably not too much.
Not too much. It'll become more and more natural, I think.
Over time. You won't even think about it.
That's it.
I have wondered, though. I mean, we spoke about the Joburg-Durban route, which is obviously very, very busy in December. What happens on, I don't know, the 1st of January when everyone's driving back to Joburg? We know there's a bunch of EV charging stations around Harrismith. What happens when there are 2,000 cars, 3,000 cars an hour going on the N3 back to Joburg? Is it just inevitably going to meet long queues? Or do you, as an EV owner, not travel on those days?
Bit of both. So I think plan around those kind of high intensity travel days as much as possible. To be honest, if we start hitting that problem seriously, where you're in a queue of 10 to get to two charges on near Harry Smith, I think we're in a very good place as a country, because a lot of things would have had to have happened to get us to that level. Mm-hmm. But what I have heard from the charging point guys is that it's not a long time to spin up and add another high-speed DC charging unit there. The only trick is that there needs to be enough grid capacity supplying that location.
Some of these locations are quite rural.
That's true. And sometimes if there isn't enough capacity, then you can put a 100-kilowatt charger down, but it's going to have to get splits in terms of what it can provide. Mm. Say, 250-kilowatt charging sessions of one 100-kilowatt charger. So planning all round, planning on the driving side as the consumer and planning on the operator's side as the network provider.
Mm. Okay. Is there anything else holding back EVs? I mean, we've spoken about taxes, we've spoken about the charging infrastructure. What else is keeping South Africans from buying EVs? I know that at one stage, I don't know if it's still the case, there was concern that the batteries on these cars wouldn't last all that long, and then the consumer would be saddled with a huge bill to have the battery replaced.
Yeah. It's a good point you bring up, because in reality, what's actually happening is that these batteries are lasting a lot longer than expected. And when I say that, I mean most batteries on a new EV have an 8-year warranty. But reality is that they're lasting up to 15 years and still having around about an 80% state of health, meaning that you can charge a battery up to 80% and still get 80% of the range. That's 15 years later. If you take a step back, I mean, who really keeps their car for 15 years before trading it in on a new one? In South African terms, that's quite a long time. Mm. So, you know, at the same time as there are recycling operations starting up for EV batteries, you're seeing this in the UK, Europe, and the US. Companies like Redwood Materials, BASF, and others are all setting up recycling centers in anticipation of a flood of these EV batteries coming off the market. The problem is there's not enough feedstock coming out of the EV drivers yet, because they're lasting so long. Mm. So it's, again, one of these misnomers that you're going to have to pay a fortune to change that battery one day. You know, sorry for you. It's not the case. I mean, what will happen is that battery, when it eventually has its end of life as a vehicle battery, will move into a stationary purpose battery. You know, maybe it moves into a storage place at an EV charging station or in a building or a house. Mm-hmm. So I think that's, you know, not something to worry about as a consumer, and not, shouldn't be held back on that decision.
Okay.
The biggest decision, or the biggest point for me really, Duncan, is the price point.
Right.
It's really the price point. I mean, South Africa, 60% of the market is for cars that are less than 400,000 rand in terms of new car sales. We don't have an EV that's less than 400,000 rand yet. So with the right combination of policies, incentives, cost optimization in the cars, if we can get a car in at sort of the 350K price point and suddenly you're in line with the current hatchbacks that are out there, that I think will start to spark the interest, I think, in the mass market, which is really where we want to see the
volume. How far are we from that?
Not far. Not
350,000 EV.
Not far. Some of the guys, the Chinese vendors, really have got those price points already in play in China.
It's just the taxes that are pushing them up here.
Exactly. Even if you doubled that price and put the 100% tax on them, we would still be able to get to that price range. The challenge really, and we will need to see how all the OEMs kind of fit together and find their own competitiveness and differentiators for their price points that they bring it in. But as I said, all of them have got an EV that could compete at a certain price point to make this popular. We just need to pull the trigger and go.
Okay. What about the resale value of these vehicles? Are we seeing any data on that yet?
If you look at Auto Trader, you look at cars.co.za, there's about, I'd say, 250 cars, EVs, that are currently in the second-hand market.
Okay.
You can pick up a BMW R3 now for anything between, I've seen, 280,000 rand up to about 420,000 rand, and that's for a 2016, 2018, 2019 model R3 BMW. So that's been about 8-9 years, and that's sort of the price point from about 600,000 where it started. So 50% kind of reduction.
How would that compare to an ICE vehicle in terms of the reduction you'd see in the resale value?
I think you'll see more of a dramatic effect in the reduction in the value of the vehicle at the top end of the market, faster than you would see at the lower end of the market. It's all relative. You know, if you say it decreases by 20%, you'll see it lower on the low end versus the high end. But I'll say this. I mean, the Volvos that are sitting in the market on the second-hand side are selling pretty much at a very competitive resale value up to 90% of the new car price.
Okay.
And that's for a year-old model. So again, this is why many OEMs are just testing the market with these with their future residual values and going for lease options so that they can at least assure the customers that there's a guaranteed future value to that vehicle, even if you take the risk now and lease a car for 48 months. Mm-hmm. But that being said, I mean, the thinking is at least for 3 years, it should be the same as an ICE vehicle, if not better. After 3 years, the data still has to become available.
Okay, but it's holding up nicely. It's not not like the resale value is very poor on these vehicles.
And in South Africa particularly, because we can protect those values more than what's happening overseas, where those incentives are now competing with second-hand models. And that's why second-hand models are dropping in value as well.
Ah, of course.
Yeah.
Good point. I wanted to explore, Greg, a little bit more about home charging. How realistic is it to charge your vehicle entirely with your own solar?
Yes.
You know, I think many people assume, well, when you get home, you just plug it in. But that's not necessarily the case. You actually probably don't want to keep this vehicle topped up to 100% all the time because that's not good for the battery.
Yep.
And you might only need to charge it if you're just using it to commute at the weekends, which you could then do when the sun is shining.
Exactly.
Is that what you do?
That's exactly it. It's a whole new mindset to commuting and driving. You know, typically in an ICE world, you fill up a tank once a month or at the beginning of the month, you drive it until you 10 Ks to go and you go and refuel. That's a common way to do it. Mm. Whereas in the EV world, you kind of want to keep your battery between 20% and 80% or 90% maximum and not deviate too much above that for two reasons. Mm-hmm. One is that if you go below 20%, that initial charging time is longer. It takes longer than if you start at 20% and go above. And also once you hit that 80-85% mark, the battery kind of slows down. You can imagine an analogy of a bucket, and if you take a hose pipe at full blast and you spray into that bucket, it fills up pretty quickly, but it's very rough. It's creating a lot of friction. And you've got to kind of start turning the tap down before it gets to the top, so you don't spill out any wasted energy. Works the same in a battery, so it's very important to keep your battery between that 20% and 80%. But then it becomes a thing of, well, I just need to charge when I get to 20%. I don't need to worry about charging it to full every time I need to use it. It's just for the next week's commuting, and it's a different mindset just to get your mind around.
Okay, fascinating. It's been a fascinating conversation. It's always good to hear from the owner and driver of a vehicle rather than the journalist who's spent a week or two with it trying desperately to summarize everything in a short period of time. You've had several months to spend with the EX30, so it's been great to get your insights not only on that, but also on the state of the EV market in South Africa more generally. And we'd love to invite you on the show again at some point, maybe on a regular basis, to talk about how the market is developing. I think that'll be very useful for our audience, if you don't mind.
Absolutely. It's been an absolute pleasure being here with you, Duncan. So thanks for the opportunity. Super excited about the future of EVs in the country and where we could go and what it's going to mean for us. So watch the space as we see.
And Greg Kress is, of course, Principal Director, Automotive and E-Mobility at Accenture. Thank you so much for talking to Tech Central today.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg.
Thanks, Duncan.
Great. Thank you.